For Wanna Bill, from Wallen and Woodson, I'm thinking, how about 260?
I'm going to call this meeting of the House Committee on Economic Development to order for Wednesday, April 3rd, 2019. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3386. Melissa.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3386 deals with the delivery of distilled liquor, malt beverages, wine, or cider for personal or social use at residential addresses. We do have a dash 2 amendment. It has been posted on OLS. The summary, however, is not yet in the staff measure summary. It makes some changes around, creates a shipment delivery permit in addition to a for-hire carrier permit.
Thank you. Well, welcome, Representative Doherty, and I just wanted to publicly express my appreciation so how early you got this information to us.
Yes. Thank you. We work hard. We work hard.
I know you did.
Hey, Chair Lively, Vice Chairs Bonham and Fahey. For the record, my name is Margaret Doherty, and I'm the state rep for House District 35, which is located in Tigard and parts of Southwest Portland. I'm happy to be here today to bring you House Bill 3386 with a dash 2 amendment to help modernize alcohol delivery in Oregon, as well as ensure there are proper regulations in place to ensure that alcohol stays out of the hands of minors. I initially testified before this committee on my House Bill 2523, which aimed to provide parity for distilled liquor delivery in Oregon and extend the same delivery opportunities allowed for beer, wine, and other malt beverages. Throughout the process of working on that bill, it became clear to me that the delivery of alcohol was an area that needed additional clarity to allow not only for the modernization of distilled liquor delivery, but also to ensure the integrity of other types of alcohol delivery. That is why I brought you House Bill 3386 with a dash 2 to help achieve this. What the amendment would do is two things. First of all, it would create a permit for common carriers to ship alcohol to Oregon. That permit is mentioned as shipment delivery permit in dash 2. This activity is currently allowed for beer, wine, and other malt beverages under the for hire delivery services permitted in the administrative rule. However, OLCC can only issue permission to ship alcohol currently. This is problematic because if an instance occurred where alcohol was shipped that didn't comply with the law, OLCC's only course of action would be to revoke the permission to ship. The creation of this permit in the amendment allows additional engagement and opportunity, education opportunities for a common carrier beyond just a blanket revocation. I will also be drafting an amendment that will lower the maximum fine for this permit holder. It currently is $5,000. This is if they deliver to minors and not check and so on. And I plan to lower that to $500. The second thing is it creates an additional permit separate from the one that common carriers will use, which would allow for the same day person-to-person delivery to be achieved by a third party for distilled liquor, beer, wine, and malt beverages. In the amendment, this permit is mentioned as a for-hire carrier permit. This would allow for the permit holder to go to the OLCC licensed business, a liquor store, or a grocery store. For example, pick up a product already purchased, whether it's via the internet or via phone, by a consumer, and then immediately delivered that product directly to the consumer. It's important to separate these two permits because they both achieve different features and better serve the types of shipment that occur with a common carrier, and it'll also address the new types of deliveries that will be regulated under the for-hire delivery permit. You will hear more from others on the benefits with the new permits, as well as a refresher on what is currently being allowed by OLCC. I just want to take the time, a quick moment, to thank all of the stakeholders who have been working with my office and also my Chief of Staff, Taylor Sarman, who has been pulling all of this together to get some practical language that makes sense. I think with this language, we are at a place that allows us to modernize alcohol delivery, as well as ensure the integrity of that delivery. And with that, I'm happy to answer questions.
Any questions?
Doesn't look like it.
Thank you very much.
So now I'd like to call up Jordan Bias, Jacqueline Pflug, and Danielle Romaine. Introduce yourself for the record, provide your comments.
Good Chair Lively, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Danelle Romaine. I'm here today representing the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association, and we're here in support of House Bill 3386 and want to thank Representative Doherty for her work on this important issue. As you know, alcohol is a unique product. It's not like delivering a pizza or ordering groceries on Amazon. It needs careful consideration about who's delivering the product and who the end user is who's receiving the product. There's a reason for the multitude of laws that we have regulating the production, sale, and delivery of alcohol. Oregon has a three-tier system of alcohol distribution, primarily to ensure that no one party gains a monopoly over a regulated product and that there's enough choice in the market for consumers, and also that alcohol is safely delivered to an end consumer who can legally drink the product. Distributors in the alcohol industry in general spend a lot of time thinking about how to best regulate alcohol, and you can imagine that we have a lot at stake if alcohol is not properly regulated and controlled. That's why we support the concept in 3386. The goal of the bill is to bring Oregon into modern times, acknowledging that consumers are getting alcohol delivered to their homes now from a multitude of sources, whether we're talking about traditional grocery stores or other on-premises retailers, or via delivery methods like somebody on a bike or a hired driver. We support this new access to convenient deliveries for consumers and the ability to order alcohol delivered to your doorstep with reasonable restrictions on the time of day for the delivery and limits in the quantity of the alcohol delivered. And with this new modern economy comes new considerations, such as those raised in 3386, which are, how can we ensure that alcohol is safely delivered to in an unadulterated fashion to a person who can legally accept the product? That's what 3386 is addressing, and it's time that we close this modern home delivery loop. And we urge your support of this bill and look forward to working with Representative Doherty and other stakeholders on the language to the bill. Thanks.
Chair Lively, Vice Chairs Bonham and Fahey, my name is Jordan Bice. I'm here representing TechNet, a trade association of over 80 tech companies, ranging from small startups to some of the world's largest employers. Just a quick note that our testimony that we submitted is in support of the Dash 1 amendments to the bill. We haven't done a full analysis on Dash 2, but it sounds like Dash 1s were kind of retained in the second amendment, so we're probably supportive of that as well. Thank you for the opportunity to come and speak to today in support of House Bill 3386, which would allow for third-party deliverers to add alcohol to their list of deliverable goods. The e-commerce businesses have grown rapidly over the last several years, which have opened doors for many. Whether you're a restaurant that now has new customers because you couldn't previously deliver to their doors, and now you can. Or you are running late on Thanksgiving, and you can have groceries delivered to your door as well. We think that if you are going to be delivering the turkey and the potatoes to your door, you might as well also have the opportunity to bring that bottle of wine as well. While we're naturally excited for this opportunity that this would have in promoting e-commerce, we also have to recognize the benefits that this would create for local brick-and-mortar businesses, because before that bottle of wine is taken to that doorstep, it's purchased at the local supermarket, most likely. While we greatly appreciate the hard work of Representative Doherty for recognizing the gap in current law and for bringing convening stakeholders together to craft this legislation in a way that promotes business but also protects public safety. As many of these platform providers are based in other states, we are also appreciative of the removal of the provision in the original bill, which would have required third-party platforms to be located within the state. We look forward to continued engagement with the legislature as this conversation continues, and we're happy to answer any questions. Thank you for your consideration.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively and members of the committee. My name is Jacqueline Pflug, and I am with Drizly. And thank you for the opportunity to be here today to participate, and thank you to Representative Doherty for introducing this bill. Drizly is a technology company that operates an e-commerce platform for alcoholic beverage retailers across the country in over 100 cities. The Drizly app and the Drizly website connect consumers to licensed retailers where consumers place orders And the retailers then accept the orders, pick and pack the orders, process the payments, and finally deliver that product to the consumer. Or where it's permitted in a state, they might use a third-party provider to deliver that product. To be clear, Drizly does not sell alcoholic beverages. We do not process payments. And finally, we do not deliver alcoholic beverages. But we are the number one platform in the country for same-day delivery of alcoholic beverages. We do support this bill and its first intention, which was to bring parity for distilled spirits to other alcohol beverage categories. This is a step forward in shedding post-prohibition restrictions and a needed modernization of the law. We also support the creation of actual permits for four higher carrier permits and shipment delivery permits. It's important for all entities in the chain of custody of alcoholic beverages to be known to the OLCC, screened by the OLCC, and under the jurisdiction of the OLCC. Alcohol is a highly regulated product, as you've heard all afternoon here. And it's important that the OLCC have the proper regulatory system, and it should not be in the hands of entities outside their jurisdiction. We also support the bill's inclusion of delivery hours during all store operating hours. Currently, the OLCC rules requires orders to be placed before 4 p.m. and delivery by 9 p.m. This is not practical, and it stifles the economic engine delivery can provide, and it severely limits the ease delivery is intended to create for customers. Finally, while supporting the above concepts, Drizly asks the following about the bill's current language and format. The bill speaks about the permit holders and what they may do. Do these privileges extend to the permit holders' employees as well? Employees are only referenced in Section 4, Subsection 9. Is it the intention that the employees of liquor store agents and other eligible businesses and four higher carrier permit holders also be permitted to deliver alcoholic beverages? We support this reading and inclusion of employees as it mirrors the current operation of on-premise and off-premise retailers, where servers and bartenders and people in stores may handle alcoholic beverages under the close supervision of the licensee. Employees are different than subcontractors, and our concern is that the bill clearly spell out that subcontractors of four higher carrier permits not be permitted. Subcontractors would not be screened by the OLCC, known by the OLCC, or under their jurisdiction. We encourage the committee to explore this issue and provide clarity and again ensure that responsible and regulated delivery of alcoholic beverages happen in this state.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? Doesn't look like it. Thank you very much. I'd like to now call up Catherine Chacoin. Okay. Waylon Buckham. You can. And Drew Hagedorn. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, Vice Chairs Bonham and Fahey. My name is Catherine Chacoin, and I'm Western Counsel for Wine Institute. We're a public policy association representing about 824 California wineries of all sizes. We are here not to do same-day delivery. We think if the Representative Doherty and her staff would like to pursue that for distilled spirits and other forms of alcohol, that is absolutely fine. I'm here to talk about the direct shipping program. Direct shipping has been occurring to Oregon consumers for about 30 years. It's currently regulated under statutes and OLCC regulations, and we think the program has been successfully working as it is. This bill brings in under a new framework direct shipping, as well as all of this new delivery aspects of alcohol. We think that there are some inconsistencies in the language of the bill, including use of the term for hire carrier, which is currently in OLCC regulations relating to the carriers who are delivering for direct-to-consumer shipping. We don't know, final consumer is a new term for direct-to-consumer shipping, so is social use. So we would hope that this bill could be restructured, and if there needs to be a permit for common carriers that are delivering under the direct-to-consumer shipping statutes, that the permit be placed in those statutes and the language be consistent with what's currently used in direct-to-consumer shipping. As soon as there's inconsistencies, there's space for legal interpretations that could put the direct shipping program at issue. So as written currently, we are in opposition to this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Waylon Buchan, here representing the Oregon Trucking Association today. And I signed up as neutral today because I'm extremely grateful for the tone and the work that they've put into this bill. Representative Doherty and her chief of staff have been very helpful and amicable as we work through and make suggestions. I want to piggyback on the previous testimony because I believe that we're incorporating some terms of art and some specific terms and language in there that we didn't include in Section 2 in the definitions. If you run through Section 2, there's a pretty good comprehensive, you know, list of some of the business entities that are regulated, and they have defined terms. But for hire carrier, common carrier, direct permit shipper, some of these are not defined. I think we could benefit from some additional clarity in Section 2, particularly due to the fact that in other areas of statute, those are terms of art as related to transportation. So ORS 825020, I'll call your attention to that. That's that applies to vehicles and combinations weighing over 26,000 pounds. And so oftentimes the term for hire carrier is actually applied to a heavy truck and not a Uber or Lyft type of courier service as we sort of see in the bill here. So my humble suggestion, and one that I'm happy to roll up my sleeves and continue to work with Representative Doherty on, is to tighten up those pieces of language, further clarify and define those terms so we know what sort of paradigm shift we're making, because I think in the spirit of the bill, we certainly agree that these Uber and kind of technology-centric types of courier services, there's some real benefit to regulating them in the sense that they want to do. But at the same time, I'll echo the comments that if it isn't broken, let's not fix it when it comes to our commercial carriers and our transportation networks. And I'll conclude and defer over to Drew Hagedorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Drew Hagedorn appearing today on behalf of FedEx, testifying for the moment in opposition. And I say for the moment because I'm hopeful we'll be able to continue working on amendments that are workable for all parties. I think my colleagues to the left and the right said it well. The existing statute works very well for direct shippers like FedEx. And so we're looking for verbiage in an amendment that would make clear that direct shippers and common carriers are effectively treated the same as they are today. Apologize for my voice. I obviously have a bit of a cold. But that's the basic pretense. So again, we appreciate Representative Doherty and her staff will continue working. FedEx's legal team is looking at the dash ones and twos and we're trying to construct some language that we could support. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative McEwen.
Chair Lively, thank you. Just for a comment, I think that the issues that you bring up are important. Those definitions really do have significance in the statute, and I'm hopeful that you'll all sit down and work with Representative Doherty and see if we can find a fix for these things, because 100%. We certainly don't want to jeopardize any of the good work that you are all doing, but we also want to solve this problem. So thank you for your willingness to work with her.
Thank you. Okay.
So Kelly.
Oh, Dan here.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Chair Lively and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelly Rout. I am the Director of Administrative Policy and Process Division at the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. The OLCC is neutral on the bill, but we are here to provide some background on the current state of the delivery laws in Oregon. And I will distinguish, there is a difference between how distilled spirits are delivered and how beer and wine are delivered. And distilled spirits, as Representative Doherty has testified, basically have to do an in-person order. And then those can be delivered to the person's home by a for-hire carrier. And that is the current state of the law. So I'm going to spend my time speaking about how malt beverages, wine, and cider are delivered. Certain businesses that the OLCC licenses have the privilege of delivering beer, wine, and cider directly to a consumer. These include breweries, brew pubs, and wineries, as well as businesses that can sell alcohol to go, which we call off-premises sales licenses. And those are your grocery stores, convenience stores, and places like that. Out-of-state entities may also ship wine, beer, and cider if they are eligible for and obtain a direct shipper permit. These businesses that I've just mentioned could provide the delivery service themselves, or they could use a third party provided approved by the OLCC, which we call a for-hire carrier. OLCC issues these third parties an approval, not a license or a permit, and I'll explain why that distinction is important. Anyone that delivers beer, wine, and cider directly to an Oregon consumer must ensure that they are delivering to someone that's 21 years of age and is not visibly intoxicated. If a for-hire carrier made a delivery to a minor or a visibly intoxicated person, our only compliance tool is to take away the approval. And even if we take away the approval, we don't have the authority to deny another request by that carrier. Basically, there's nothing stopping a third-party delivery company who's been revoked from turning around and reapplying for another approval. And that's just because of the limits of our authority. Compare that with a grocery store or brew pub who delivers directly to a consumer. If they were to violate OLCC delivery rules, we can take enforcement action that could include civil penalties and or license suspension. So there is a disparity between licensees and for-hire carriers when it comes to enforcement of noncompliance. Anecdotally, we have heard of instances where shipments of beer, wine, and cider have been basically been left by a for-hire carrier on a consumer's doorstep with no signature or age verification. So there is some non-compliance in the industry. How much we don't know because we are a complaint-based agency. We are working with Representative Doherty's office on language and happy to continue to do so. But I'm here to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Please.
Chair Lively and other legislators, my name is Dan Miner. I'm a resident of Oregon City. I'm an appointed liquor agent for two liquor stores, one on 30th and Sandy in Portland, another in Gladstone. I'm also representing the Association of Liquor Store Owners, our agent association. First, I'd like to thank Representative Doherty and her efforts to provide us this opportunity to potentially increase our opportunity to sell distilled spirits in Oregon. Secondly, the Association of Liquor Store Owners does support this bill. We have some concerns about how the process will eventually unfold. I can say that there will be likely many different levels of participation with liquor stores, and obviously the stores wouldn't have to participate. But I think the market forces of different sizes of stores, different locations would impact whether or not an agent participates. Right now, I'm also an off-premise licensee, so I can sell beer and wine in my stores, and I have the privilege of doing residential delivery. The limitations for same-day delivery in quantities of beer, wine, and cider, and then the timing of the ordering is so problematic to me as a retailer with the amount of technology and the staffing that I have, I've chosen to not participate. So if the limitations for distilled spirits matches the quantities for beer, wine, and cider, then I think that would be not very compelling for a liquor store to want to participate in this. For instance, depending on the time of day, I could only deliver a six-pack of beer or one or two bottles of wine. So without having a probably a prohibitive delivery surcharge added to that, it simply isn't economically feasible for me to deliver such small quantities. If someone were to order a single bottle of, for instance, Jack Daniels, which retails for about $22.95, I get commission of about $1.50 on that. So the delivery expense that I would have to do if I did it myself as a retailer, I haven't done the math, but it would be on the order of $10 or $15 at least with a pretty limited geographical location. So if this were to become a reality for us, I think we would definitely have to rely on technology companies and the for-hire carriers. And in that respect, my biggest objection to the bill as it's currently written is the provision that would potentially make the liquor agent or another off-premise licensee responsible for errors or mistakes or improper actions upon delivery. I would only hire them in a good faith effort in order they would be complying with the laws. But once the product leaves the store, they're not my employee, and I don't feel like I would need to be responsible for their misdeeds.
Thank you. Questions for either one of these members that testify? Doesn't look like it. Thank you very much. I have nobody else on the list to signed up to speak, so I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 3386, and I'll carry forward the work session to April 8th. Now I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3395.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3395 allows a person responsible for a medical marijuana grow site who is designated to produce marijuana by more than three registry identification cardholders to transfer usable marijuana to additional cardholders.
Representative Wilson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be joined by Mr. Anthony Taylor.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, Carl Wilson, House District 3, State Representative. I apologize for the whispery voice today. We have a very sharing atmosphere here at the Capitol these days. Yes, and it finally got to me. Thank you for your attention to this bill today. I appreciate the opportunity to introduce House Bill 3395, which I am sponsoring on behalf of Compassionate Oregon and patient advocate Anthony Taylor, my guest at the table. The bill really does one simple thing. It allows registered medical marijuana growers whose produce is already tracked in the OLCC system to transfer medical product to additional medical marijuana cardholders. There are a number of reasons for doing this, but one that I'd like to mention today, and it's a compelling reason, is that we'd like to allow this to help minimize the opportunities of product diversion into the wrong hands. Countering product diversion into illicit markets is critical to maintaining the integrity of our state-regulated cannabis programs. House Bill 3395 allows medical cardholders, now that's medical cardholders, access to produce from registered medical grow sites of a certain size. The product has been assigned to the grower by previous agreement, so the existing patients are protected. These transfers from producer to registration cardholders are tracked because these grow sites comply with the OLCC tracking requirements. So with your permission, I'll let Mr. Taylor speak today about how the medical program and patients would benefit by the approval of this bill today. And Mr. Chair, with your grace, I will take my leave here.
Sure. Thank you very much
thank
for
you.
Being here.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Thank you, Chair Lively, Vice Chairs Fahey and Bonham. For the record, my name is Anthony Taylor. I am a co-founder of Compassionate Oregon. And I am here today to speak in support of my bill, of course. As Representative Wilson indicated, one of the things, probably the most important thing this bill does is will ratchet down the inventory in medical marijuana producers' inventory. And this slide shows that right now we have an average of 4,509 patients that are being grown for. In January 2017, that number was 25,000. In January 2016, that number was 35,000. It now stands at what you see there, 4,509 patients. If each one of those patients is growing six plants or has six plants grown for them and each one produces a pound, then you have 27,000, you know, pounds for each plant. If it goes to 1.5 pounds, which they're allowed to possess by law, it goes to 40,000. That's 20 tons. And it's all tracked. I mean, it's in the inventory, it's in the tracking system, but it tempts diversion. And we need to create a pathway for them to reestablish the pathway that existed a couple of years ago where a patient could, or a grower could transfer to any patient. In 2017, that was changed and the rules were changed to allow only those patients that were being grown for at a grow site to be transferred to. We'd like to change that. And, you know, if they're not getting it from a grower, then they have to go to a store, they go to, you know, as I say in my testimony, other patients, friends, underground markets, and the stores. And I've included also, that's the authorization to transfer form. This bill requires any tract grower, grow site, to have one of these signed by a patient because the grower does not own the cannabis. The patient owns the cannabis and must give permission for it to be transferred any place, whether it's a processor or a dispensary, and now in this case, to a patient that's not registered at the grow site. And also in conjunction, there's some talk about the personal agreement, which is 475B822. This personal agreement is all an OLCC producer is required to have to transfer product to an OMMP patient. I think that the OMMP growers should have the same privileges. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Anthony? Representative Drazen.
Can you tell me from your prior screen when you had the number of patients and the number of plants? So if this presents an opportunity for diversion, has there ever been a conversation about the number of plants necessary per patient to kind of balance it out with need and opportunity so that the other way to address diversion is to just reduce supply in this category a little bit?
Chair Lively, Representative Drazen, yes, that's possible. It hasn't been discussed since about 2005, frankly. But you're growing stuff. Even if you ratchet it down to bare bones, you're still going to produce more than you're allowed to have. Well, not allowed to have. A grower is allowed to have 12 pounds per plant outdoor and 6 pounds per plant indoor. But anytime you're growing stuff, I mean, if anybody that's planted zucchini, tomatoes, they know that it's got to go someplace because you're not going to eat it all and you don't want to rot in a crisper. So,
is there a number that's the right number then, since you don't want it to rot in the crisper? Is there a number that would not allow for diversion but would supply need?
Chair Lively, Rep. Drazen, 6.
At the current, so 6 is the perfect amount to not allow for diversion and to supply need of patients.
Chair Lively, Representative Drazen, you can't control growing products that well. If you've got an acre of blueberries, you're going to overproduce for what you're going to use in your home. So you put it on the market or it wastes away. There may be a sweet spot, and some of these growers that are growing for multiple patients don't have 6 plants in the ground for every patient. So there is some self-regulation going on. But on the other hand, growers that aren't talented may not produce enough in 6 plants for one patient. And so that's why we're interested in allowing these medical growers that are in the metric cannabis tracking system to transfer to any valid patient.
So I suppose, Chair, just to bring it full circle for myself.
Go right ahead.
If you'll indulge me on that. So just to understand this, this bill is intended to address diversion, which is not needed because that is the perfect number of plants. Did
you
I miss something?
You have to rephrase that question.
It's okay. It's all right. Thank you for indulging me.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair. Rep. Drazen asked many of the questions that I was interested in as well. It does seem like we have a balance issue in terms of what is being allowed and what is being consumed. My son, when he grew his 4 plants and had extra, composted the extra. I'm not sure why we think we have to find a home for it if you're growing more than can actually be used by patients. But here's my question. How do we track the patients, the additional patients for whom product is being provided? Are they then able to get product from more than one grower?
Chair Lively, Representative Marsh, no, they're not allowed to get from more than one grower. But what we're trying to do is get this back into the patients that need it. I mean, we're down 90% on patients who get cannabis from growers. That's a huge deal for a lot of these patients where 53% of them are on fixed or low incomes and qualify for a reduced card. So the objective of this bill is to get that product into the hands of patients that need it, that can't afford to go to a store to buy it.
Follow.
So the additional patients who will be coming in or who will get to share the supply aren't associated with the grower? They can't find a grower?
Chair Lively, Representative Marsh, yes, that's the situation. In 2017, when we reduced the numbers of plants in a grow site down to 48, that really ratcheted down the number of patients that were being grown for. And as you can see, well, in my testimony, it's dropped from 35,000 down to 4,500. And no less people are using cannabis as medicine. But we need to give this to these patients so that so 35,000 patients that I was talking about in 2016, they didn't have to pay anything for their product. And they could afford that. And that's what's made this program so successful, is a designated grower aspect of the program. But in 2017, through rule, we limited the ability of those multiple patient grow sites that are being tracked to transfer out to any valid patient. And we need to reestablish that pathway.
Just one more. So what you're saying is that another way of looking at that is a grower who has 12 plants can accommodate, it's reasonable to say that they can accommodate four patients?
Chair Lively, Rep. Marsh, yeah, that's a reasonable expectation. And some of the growers aren't growing six plants for every patient. They're allowed to. And those that do produce excess, whether they're growing two plants, four plants, or 12 plants, 12 plant grow sites aren't tracked, so they wouldn't be in this mix. But it just enables these patients to have access to product that they used to get for free, and now they're forced into stores, unregulated markets, friends, and other patients. And we need them to have access to product that is being grown by these growers that they used to have. And the ratcheting down of the grow sites, the added regulations, and those things that we did in 2017, they've devastated the multiple patient growers in this program. And that's what we're trying to do, is help support these growers by allowing them to get more product out into the patients and to help the state reducing the amount of product that's in the system, it's in the system. We need to reduce it. And there's no way. They can't sell it into the OLCC unless they have water rights. And only 18 of the 785 that have grow site administrators, multiple patient grow sites, have managed to be able to do that. So when we talk about consolidating these two programs, we're looking at losing all those multiple patient growers because they can't qualify for water rights.
From one problem to another.
That's right.
Further questions?
Chair Lively, I'd also like to thank Representative Wallen for co-sponsoring the bill also. Thank you.
And I have one more person on the list, Sunny Day Sanchez. Not a lot of room over there with the screen, but welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively and the committee. My name is Sunny Day Sanchez, and I am a what the OHA refers to as a grow site administrator. And I'm a resident of Benton County, but our grow site is in Linn County, just outside of Albany. I wanted to show my support for this bill. I believe it's HB 3395, not 55. Okay. And I also wanted to mention that I am one of the 18 grow site administrators that can transfer into the OLCC. I am one of the 18 people that has a legal source of water to do so. I am definitely a proponent of compassionate care for these patients who have lost their growers. We're talking about people on fixed incomes, people that can barely make it to their doctor's appointment once a year to qualify for this program. If you're on a fixed income of $700 a month, Even a dollar a gram is substantial compared to getting their medicine for free. One thing I do want to bring up is that the legislature has explored other options to provide for patients through the recreational OLCC stream. In 2016, the legislature passed SB 1511, allowing licensed producers to grow compassionately provide OMMP patients. The OLCC entered into rulemaking in 2017 to allow for the change in law, but once the rules were implemented, the legislature passed SB 1057 in 2017, which adjusted the rules. So the OLCC had to revisit those rules. But, you know, here we are in 2019, and only two producers have opted for this medical canopy to provide for patients. Another reason why I support HB 3395 is it opens up access in counties that are red that do not allow recreational marijuana. So I definitely want to end my testimony here. It's my first time providing oral testimony because I'm very nervous. Please forgive me. And that's it. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Any questions? Representative McLean.
I think that the last thing that you said, I consider myself not an expert on any of this, okay? But the last thing that you said about the red counties, the idea that this would allow for medical patients or medical marijuana cardholders in red counties to be able to get inexpensive medical marijuana? Is that what you were saying?
What I'm saying is that it opens up an opportunity for them to seek getting their medicine from places other than recreational stores.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Other questions? Representative Drazen.
Thank you for coming today, beautifully. I'm wondering how hard was it for you to get your water right?
Well, my good friend who has been supporting this medical marijuana grow, we were preparing for the future when Measure 91 passed, and it isn't something that happens overnight. It is a very timely process. So we started our water right application with the Water Resources Department in 2016, and were awarded our permit to prove up in 2017.
Any further questions? Thank you very much for coming and testifying.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3395, and we'll carry forward any potential work session to April 8th. So now I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2098.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we currently have two amendments posted on OLIS. The dash three is it replaces the measure. It allows the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to revoke a marijuana retailer license for failure to pay a retail tax or file a return twice in any four consecutive quarters if the Department of Revenue has issued the licensee a distraint warrant for the non-payment of tax or issued a notice of determination and assessment for the failure to file a return. The dash five amendment, also a replacement of the measure, establishes and prescribes the membership for an advisory committee to advise the OLCC, Oregon Health Authority, and Oregon Department of Agriculture on the standards for testing the potency of marijuana and marijuana items.
Members, we're expecting another amendment, so what we're going to do is just talk a little bit about these two amendments, and then we'll carry this one forward to Monday also in hopes that the additional amendment is received, so we have a chance to talk about that before we take any final action. But Tom and Nikki, if you'd like to come up and just briefly describe the two we currently have, or the one that combines all those, whatever it does.
Thank you, Chair Lively, members of the committee. Nikki Terzieff here on behalf of the Oregon Industry Progress Association. You've seen us before this committee several times. As you know, we're worried about the nuts and bolts of running these businesses. It is a legalized industry now, and we're keen on doing it right and refining that and what that means. Part of what we've identified in the overall industry that we know we need to sharpen the edges on are the labs, lab testing, lab results, consumer confidence in what the potency results are. We've seen wild variants, and I know Mike Getlin and I have been in all of your offices speaking with you and your capable staff, and so I won't belabor the point, but what we're asking in the Dash 5 amendment is for OLCC to pull together relevant stakeholders from the industry, OHA, as well as the Oregon Department of Ag, so we can have a comprehensive conversation. Let's look at what we need to fix. Let's come back in 2020, and let's make sure that we're delivering what we've promised Oregonians will deliver.
Thank you, Nicole. Tom.
Chair Lively, members, I'm Tom Burns on behalf of Chalice Farms. I was here earlier and we talked about an amendment that had two parts. One was the production side. You just heard a conversation about production. And I think on the production side, there clearly needs to be something to put a cap on production in this state. But the Dash 3 amendments, which we are now in front of you, only talks about the tax side. And the tax side stems from an article or a news story out of K2 back in November that identified data from the Oregon Department of Revenue that there were 170 some odd retail establishments that had not paid their taxes. These are taxes that are collected by the taxpayers. The reason why they're not paying their taxes is variable. But the problem stems from the fact that while the Department of Revenue can go after these people and hound these people looking for the payment, the OLCC currently does not have authority to immediately revoke or suspend the license. And this is a problem that they have identified, we have identified, and we think that the Dash 3 amendments address that problem by giving the OLCC the authority to suspend or revoke a license if somebody has not paid their taxes for 2 out of 4 consecutive quarters. It's just simply one of those things that the OLCC did not anticipate the problem. And when the original laws were written some time ago, no one anticipated that people wouldn't pay their taxes. And while, like I said, the revenue can go after it, the OLCC can't do it. So this would simply give them that authority. I asked for the Dash 3. And as to the Dash 5, and I don't understand whether they can be merged together, but the Dash 5 does make eminent sense in that they're having problems since day one in this program with labs. Many labs are competent, but there are labs that have problems in figuring out how to either read results or publish results. And I think a dialogue along the way have identified here. It makes perfect sense. So we ask for the Dash 3, and we'll work with people on the Dash 5s. Thank you.
One other amendment. We're trying to find a way to merge this together. So come Monday, we'll have an opportunity to hear it all. There's somebody today here from OLCC, but unless there's reason to get further into, we'll wait until Monday when we have, hopefully, everything together and we can try to sort this out, if that works for people. Okay? Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
So I closed the hearing.
You closed the hearing. Carry it forward.
So I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2098 and carry forward a potential work session for April 8th. Okay. That's all the hearings.
That is correct. Okay. Now we have a
series of work sessions. And just for members here, so currently, as we go through this, just currently we know that House Bill 2053, 2900, and 2909, well, those work sessions will be carried forward to Monday. So we won't be, at least those we won't be dealing with today. So we're going to start with.
Could you read them again?
Oh, sorry. 2053, 2900, and 2909.
And at this point, we also don't have paperwork for 2454.
So also 2454. We don't have the paperwork for. Okay. That's it. Is that it? Okay. Where are we starting?
Do we need a
standing? Do that one?
Oh no, I just didn't see it.
Well, Sure, let's stand at these for just a second. Okay, we'll come back to order. And I believe we're going to start with a work session on House Bill 2054.
Not all. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you heard this bill on February 20th. It authorizes the Oregon Innovation Council to make equity investments from the Oregon Innovation Fund into contract with one or more management companies to manage those equity investments. There's also a dash two, which adds a definition of equity investment as any investment not prohibited under Article 11, Section 6 of the Oregon Constitution. It also adds the Oregon Health and Science University to the list of eligible institutions for the two higher education member positions. There is no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. And so we are ready to go. So please.
Chair Lively, I move to adopt the dash two amendment dated March 27th, 2019.
Representative Bonham moves to adopt the dash two amendment dated March 27th, 2019. Is there any discussion about the amendment? Please call the roll.
President
Barreto?
Aye.
President
Brazen?
Aye.
President Helm?
Aye.
President March?
Aye.
President McEwen?
Aye.
President
McLean? Aye.
President
Wallen? Yes.
President Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bonham?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fahey?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. So the amendment is adopted.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 2054 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bonham moves House Bill 2054 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Fahey.
Thank you, Chair Lively. I'm going to be a no on this bill today. I feel somewhat uncomfortable with the idea of the state making early stage equity investments in companies for which it might be too early stage for equity to be the right approach. And also, you know, there's a reason why the private market isn't filling this gap. And so it makes me uncomfortable that government would fill that gap in that case.
Very good. Any further discussion? Doesn't look like it. Please call the roll in final passage.
Representative Barreto?
Aye.
Representative Grayson?
Aye.
Representative Helm?
No.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative McEwen?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Wallen?
Yes.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bonham?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fahey?
No.
Chair Lively?
Aye. So the motion passes, and I need a volunteer carrier to carry this bill, since this is one of the few we don't refer to someplace else. So who is the volunteer? Drazen? Thank you. Representative Drazen will carry the bill. Okay. So this one?
Yes.
Okay.
That one next.
I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2181.
So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I feel I need to explain this one a little bit. We heard it on March 18th. The measure, as introduced, requires the State Workforce and Talent Development Board to conduct a study and analyze how to implement those recommendations of the Task Force on Maritime Sector Workforce Development. We have a dash one amendment because I think I mentioned back in March, the Senate had already passed the recreation of the task force and had passed it on to Ways and Means. But to have the board consider the recommendations of the task force that sunset at the end of 2018 and the one that's being recreated by the Senate bill, we needed to put it all into one amendment. So what we have now is a combined amendment that establishes the task force to continue the work of the predecessor task force and includes the State Workforce and Talent Development Board study components of those recommendations. There is no revenue impact, there's been a fiscal impact issued, and we are adding a subsequent referral to a joint Ways and Means so they can act on either the Senate or our version of this bill.
Any questions, discussions about the amendment? Doesn't look like it.
Chair Lively, I move to adopt the dash one amendments dated March 26, 2019.
Representative Bonham moves to adopt the dash one amendments dated March 26, 2019. Any further discussion on the amendment? Please call the roll.
Representative
Barreto?
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Vice Chair Bonham?
Yes.
Vice Chair Fahey?
Yes.
Chair Lively?
Aye. So the motion to approve the amendment has been adopted.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 2181 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill will be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Bonham moves House Bill 2181 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion of that motion?
Aye.
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 Yes.
Aye.
Vice Chair Bonham?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fahey?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. So the motion passes and the measure is sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. So now I'll open a session on House Bill 2243.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you heard this bill on March 20th. It defines public library as a public agency that provides free and equal access to library and information services for all residents of a city, county, library service district, school district, community college district, or library district. It requires the state library board to establish minimum conditions for public libraries that includes financial support from public funds and regular open hours, and also considers the library's service population. We have a no revenue impact on this, and there's a fiscal impact issued, which is indeterminate, and this one does not have a subsequent referral.
Very good.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 2243 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bonham moves House Bill 2243 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion of this measure? Excuse me, Representative McLean.
So the important part there was that they have to provide everything free. I mean, that was something I don't remember having any conversation about all of a sudden. And so to get the funds, everything has to be free.
Just say that, yeah.
Let me grab the actual measure here.
Maybe.
So as it defines it, the definition would be in statute as a public library that, so as used in the statutes, a public library that provides free and equal access to library and information services for all residents of a local government unit. And those different types that I talked about are those of that local government unit. Actually, sorry, wait a minute, I missed something. Public library means a public agency that provides free and equal access to library and information services. So it is including in the definition that, but it does not necessarily have a definition of what that.
Well,
what
there
means.
Are library districts,
mm-hmm.
Right.
That are different.
They are technically considered a local. They are a local government unit in this same statute. Local government unit means any city, county, library service district established under ORS Chapter 451, school district, community college district, or a library district established under ORS 357-216 to 357-286.
Okay.
So it does include them.
Okay.
Okay. Representative McEwen.
Chair Lively, thank you. Representative McLean, thank you for raising this issue. We have had many, many discussions in my office about this very simple bill. Simple bills are never very simple, as it turns out. I have libraries in my district for whom this definition could have become problematic. A lot of thought went into it. It's my understanding now that the bill is okay the way it is drafted, but I know that there are some libraries for whom that this could have created some difficulty.
Yeah.
But I'm checking with my staff right now, and it looks to me as though it is defined the way it is.
Thank you. I think that's what we heard in the testimony too, but I knew there was original concern about that definition.
There are some libraries who are as you said, fall under different governmental structures.
Mm-hmm, right.
But I think it's been worked out to the satisfaction of everyone involved, unless there's someone in the room that wants to speak to it. But this was not a simple thing to work through, and it could have had some very negative effects on some very important rural libraries.
Representative Wallen.
Thank you. In fact, one of my concerns, and it still is a concern actually, is that a place that has books that no longer falls under this definition then gets a new name. It would have to be a reading room or something. It wouldn't be a library. That's what it was explained to me. And the local government units that pass library districts were not operating under this definition. So they think they're operating a library district, and now we may be changing the definition of what they're even doing, making it even more complicated. And I haven't had a lot of conversations in my office about it. My library came to me and asked me for this because they want it to maintain this standard, but they even said, we actually have 12 or so libraries in our library system, and they said some of them might have to close or become renamed as reading rooms or something, and they seem to be okay with that, but that gives me a little heartburn, so I don't know what to do with this bill.
Okay, Representative Drazen.
Thank you. Maybe somebody remembers this from public testimony, but my library charges for stuff. Mm-hmm. Is mine the only library that does that? Like, if you want to get a really popular book, you can pay to get that book. Is mine the only library that does stuff like that?
Washington does.
Does that? That's outside this, right? Just because they have some things that aren't free, they don't have to have everything that's free.
The government, they're free to the government, didn't she say that in your definition?
It's been a while.
I interpreted that to be free to the public that lives within those jurisdictions in which the library provides services, is the way I read that. Because I know in our case, the library historically, if you live in the city, you get a free card. If you live outside of the library, which is the city, you historically had to buy a card, though they now can have been able to change that where they can offer under certain circumstances free cards through. But historically, so whether it's via a library district or a library that's made up of a city or a county, those people that live within those jurisdictions got the free service. But I don't know the issue from a standpoint of charging additional services, what that...
Since there's concerns, do you want to just hold it over till Monday or till next week?
Getting answers to questions. Yeah.
We could do that. Do we already have a motion on the floor or what? I've lost track. Where are we at?
We made a motion.
We can rescind. Chair Lively, I move that we rescind the motion.
Okay. Is it a motion to rescind the motion? Don't know how that works, but let's just call the roll on that.
Yeah, we're rescinding the motion. We're going to vote. Okay. <laughs> <laughs> Representative Barreto? Aye. Representative Drazen? Aye. Representative Helm? Aye. Representative Marsh? Aye. Representative McEwen? Aye. Representative McLean? Aye. Representative Wallen? Yes. Representative Witt? Aye. Representative Vice Chair Bonham? No.
Aye. So the motion's been rescinded, and we'll carry this hearing work session over to Monday and hopefully have some additional answers, clarification for you then. Thank you for that. Good team player. Okay.
We're at 2310.
So I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2310. That's into Fahey, I believe.
Chair Lively, I move to adopt the -2 amendments dated March 19th, 2019.
Representative Fahey moves to adopt the -2 amendments dated March 19th, 2019. Is there any discussion of the -2 amendments?
Yeah, could we have a pro?
And you have what?
Explain it.
Oh, good.
-2.
Sorry.
you jumped again.
I'm getting in a hurry here.
Anyway, so Mr. Chair, Representative Barreto, the -2 amendment. So the overall bill establishes the Prosperity 1000 pilot program to provide career coaching, occupational training, job placement services for at least 1,000 low-income job seekers who reside in areas of concentrated poverty. The -2 amendment modifies the program goals to focus on serving parents who have exited the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program but remain in poverty due to low-wage employment. It clarifies that the federal reimbursement of 50% of the program costs are to be reinvested in the pilot program. It changes sort of the oversight to being the Department of Human Services and the State Workforce and Talent Development Board. We'll establish a joint steering committee for the pilot program, and the board will have the staffing of that steering committee. It also modifies the appropriation mechanism. So the department will distribute the $5 million of general fund to Work Systems, Inc., who will then further distribute those funds to the local workforce development boards to implement the pilot program.
Sure, go ahead.
Follow up. So Work Systems, Inc., I saw this a couple times in the dash one amendment, the dash two amendment. Can you tell me what that Work Systems, Inc. is?
Yes, Representative Brito. Work Systems, Inc. is one of the nine local workforce development boards in Oregon, formed under the Federal Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act.
Okay. So, further discussion. I will be a yes on the amendment. I will be no on the overall bill.
Okay, thank you. Further discussion of the amendment. Okay, if we can have the roll call, please.
Representative Brito?
Aye.
Representative Payton?
Aye.
Representative Helm?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative McEwen?
Aye.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Representative Wallen?
Yes.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bonham?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fahey?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye.
So the amendment is adopted. Representative Fahey.
Chair Lively, I move HB 2310 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Fahey moves House Bill 2310 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion of that motion? Representative Brito.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, we were talking about $5 million going to 1,000 workforce trainees, plus I think they got a 3.125 match from another entity, and it just seems like a lot of dollars, $8,000 per person, you know, for training. It seems like, you know, I think a lot of companies would take that as a tax credit, you know, and take people in to train these people on the job and probably do just as well, maybe even better as far as training for the workforce. So I'm going to be a no on this. I think it's kind of headed down the wrong direction. So,
and you, Representative Grayson.
I'm also going to be a no on this. I don't find it, I appreciate the intent, but I don't find the actual implementation of it to be compelling compared to other programs that are already in existence. And I don't think that this is the right time for this particular program to move forward with a $5 million general fund appropriation.
Representative Wallen.
Thank you. Everything Christine said, I agree with. And also, it's very Portland-centric, and that's just very hard for me to support from Southern Oregon. Thank you.
Would you like that?
I'll let my vote speak for itself.
Okay. Any further discussion of the motion? Excuse me, Representative McClain.
I feel like I need to say something positive about this bill because last night it was the one I thought I understood, and I thought this looks like good stuff. We're trying to make sure that we have all the supports, you know, in line for workers to be able, you know, to go forward with better jobs and better opportunities to be employed. And so I felt like it's a good process, and it looks like we're trying to help folks that don't have all the support systems in place. So I guess I'm going to be a yes, and I understand all of the no comments, though, and appreciate those. Thank you.
And for everybody, just to remember, it does go to Ways and Means. Mm-hmm. So for those that object, appreciate that we're not approving the expenditure. Yeah. We're approving the policy. And it'll have to be weighed against a lot of other requests in Ways and Means. So I'm sure some of your concerns will be addressed down there, too. Certainly.
Mr. Chair, if there are no votes on this going down to Ways and Means, it means, you know, they look at it a little differently than if it was unanimous.
That's right.
Good point.
Further. Please call the roll on final passage.
Representative Brito?
No.
Representative Drazen?
No.
Representative Helm?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative McEwen?
Aye.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Representative Wallen?
No.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bonham?
No.
Vice Chair Fahey?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. So the motion carries, and the measure will be sent to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Chair Lively?
Yes.
I may have missed an opportunity. Do you mind if I comment?
No, feel free.
I'm going to give this a yes with a courtesy vote. Because of the issues that my colleagues have brought up about it being metro-centric, there are those of us who are in rural communities who care deeply about workforce as well. And I can't imagine any of this money is going to flow very far outside the Tri-County area. But I do understand the need for it and why we're doing it. And I think sending it down to Ways and Means is the appropriate place to have this conversation. But I would like to have my vote listed as a courtesy vote, please. Vote. Thank you.
Very well, we can do that. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2320. So, Melissa, before we take motions.
All right, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2320 requires the Department of Administrative Services to transfer a fixed percentage of forecasted lottery revenues to counties for economic development. There is a dash one, which changes the adjustment to the allocation for the Regional Solutions Program. There's conversation about continuing that by agreement, but not in statute. It also changes the dispersal adjustment to the first fiscal quarter of a subsequent biennium to compensate for the differences between the actual and forecasted revenues in the biennium. We have a fiscal impact statement for this. It does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. There's also a revenue impact statement.
Okay. Any discussion of the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. I'll hold my.
Okay. Any discussion of the amendment? Okay. Call the roll for the amendment, please.
You want to make a motion?
Oh.
Chair Lively, I move to adopt the dash one amendment dated March 13th, 2019.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, are we ready? I'm obviously not, but Representative Bonham moves to adopt the dash one amendment stated March 13th, 2019. There. Now, is there any discussion since we've made the motion to adopt? Doesn't seem like it. Now you can call the roll. Thank you.
Representative Barreto?
Aye.
Representative Brazen?
Aye.
Representative Hill?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Wong?
Yes.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bonham?
Aye.
Vice Chair Katie?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. So the amendment is adopted.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 2320 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Bonham moves House Bill 2320 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am, if you'll excuse the comments from a cranky curmudgeon here.
Go right ahead.
I'm frustrated, Mr. Chairman, that in my overly simplified view of things, economic development has de-evolved in this state to growing pot. Comprehensive economic development means we grow more pot and comprehensive regional development means that we throw in hemp. So I'm just wondering, when we're sending money out to the counties to do economic development, what is it that we're expecting them to do? Yes, I mean, I don't know if so, this is just we give it away and the counties can do whatever they want, or I'm seriously concerned, Mr. Chairman, that we give money away without a direction. There's no big game plan. We don't use money for targeted purposes other than growing pot.
So when the lottery was originally started, there was an agreement with the counties in order to get support to do the lottery. And one of the agreement was a certain percentage of those proceeds would go to counties to do economic development.
Mm-hmm.
So appreciate during those days, it's very different economic times than we're today. So you're absolutely correct. A lot has changed since this. And over time, There's been clarifications of what the county can spend the money on for economic development or not. In fact, there's even been some court cases that's further defined what economic development means in different counties, given the conditions of those counties. So all of that has kind of, over the time, done. And all this bill does is goes back to the original intent.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely correct. Economic development is very different today. We didn't have cannabis. We didn't have a lot of things when this was originally established. But the expectations of counties, from my standpoint, is still pretty clear of what economic development. And so some in my county, they have an economic development group that works, and they foster, they do a lot of stuff in food processing and organics in a lot of areas that way, that growing out in the county, businesses and that. So they support those types of businesses. And they also, most of the counties also have a grant program that they use some of these funds for, to grant support up and starting businesses. And there's many examples over the years, these planned places that local businesses were able, with that grant, to help them get the business started and become pretty good. But it does vary amongst counties, and it is very different economic development today. But I believe there's still consensus and guidelines amongst counties of what the expectation is of money for economic development. Go back to this. When we started this conversation, there are a lot of questions about what economic development is and the incentives. And so hopefully, when we get past this point, we'll have more time to talk about some of those other types of things. The issues you raised about,
yes,
what really is economic development in this state, not just counties, but that, and are we really focused in the right place today versus where we've been?
And Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that very much. That's the front end of my concern, and the back end is, maybe it doesn't even apply, because I don't know what, I guess if you haven't developed the criteria, then a non-performance of no criteria is meaningless.
Yeah,
but
I see what you're saying.
In the event that we should ever develop a real program, I hope that we also develop some clawback provisions when there is non-performance. And Mr. Chairman, you've been very gracious here in allowing me to express my utter, complete, and total frustration. And I thank you for that. And there are a lot of very fine people who have sponsored this bill, not the least of which is you yourself, Mr. Chairman. And I will support the bill. But I also want to put on the record that I am totally frustrated that it is time that the state of Oregon get serious, serious about doing real economic development. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for those comments. Representative Barreto.
I would like to thank the good representative for bringing up this point, and I think I've expressed it a little bit out here. Over the last 35 years that I've been in business, Oregon has completely changed. And, you know, what used to be economic development used to be attraction, you know, and then it went to retention. And now it's incubator groups and starting up small businesses from scratch, or growing new products, you know, that we legalize. And it is frustrating because the more bad policy we put out here against business, the more you need to feed this economic development machine that we've created. And now we spend $2 billion a year, you know, trying to help business when good policy would help it much cheaper and much better. So
I agree with your frustration. I think we need more. I commit that we'll have more of those conversations, hopefully enough that we can tee up things for maybe 2020 to come back, because they're absolutely valid concerns and things we really know, because things are different. Representative Marsh, did you have a comment?
Thank you, Chair. I just chime in quickly and thank Rep. Witt for his comments, because when you look across what counties are spending this money for, it's everything,
yep,
in the bucket. It just depends on how you economic development, and we could talk about that for a long time. However, I do want to note that I really do support the regional solutions piece of this. Regional solutions, I think, has proved its worth out in our communities. So our regional solutions teams are pulling together projects and partners in various parts of the state, and I think to the degree that this bill goes to support the county share of that program, that's money well spent.
Thank you. Any further comments, discussions? Have you already made a motion?
Yep.
Okay, we can have the roll call, please, in final passing.
Aye. Representative
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative McEwen?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Aye.
Vice Chair Bottoms?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fahey?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. The motion passes, and the measure is sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. Okay.
I know we're here for that.
Is this one?
Yep.
Okay, so I'll open a work session on House Bill 2933. Melissa.
So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you heard House Bill 2933 on March 4th. This is one of the Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Region Board bills. It makes the development of residential housing necessary to attract and keep employees in the Eastern Oregon Border Region part of the workforce development purposes and activities of that board. There are also some other non-substantive changes to the board statutes in the bill. It has an emergency clause. There's a no revenue impact, and it has a minimal fiscal impact.
Okay.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 2933 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bonham moves House Bill 2933 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion of that motion? Seeing none, please call the roll and final passage.
Representative Brito? Aye. Representative Hum? Aye. Representative Marsh? Aye. Representative McEwen? Aye. Representative McLean? Yes. Representative Wallen? Yes. Representative Witt? Aye. Vice Chair Bonham? Yes. Vice Chair Fahey? Yes. Chair Lively? Aye.
Motion passes, and since Representative Finley's sitting here, I assume he agrees to carry it.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. Okay, let's open a work session on House Bill 3061.
So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you heard this on March 25th. This bill allows the political subdivision to convey real property to a nonprofit, municipal, or private corporation for the purpose of providing broadband service. It requires a limitation on the instrument that conveys the property to restrict the use and include for the revision of the property if it's not used to provide broadband service. The bill also allows a political subdivision by resolution to waive or relinquish a reversionary interest in the transferred property after less than 20 years if determined to be in the public interest. There's an emergency clause on the bill. It has a minimal revenue impact and a no fiscal impact.
Very good.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 3061 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bonham moves House Bill 3061 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion of that motion? Hearing none, please call the roll and final passage.
Representative Barreto?
Aye.
Representative Hum? Aye. Representative Marsh? Aye. Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Wallen?
Yes.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bonham?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fahey?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. So the motion passes, and Representative Reschke will carry this bill on the floor since this is his bill. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3251.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3251, there's a dash two amendment which replaces the measure. That amendment authorizes Business Oregon to provide matching grants to membership organizations and business accelerators for capacity building and technical assistance to businesses that manufacture gear and apparel for use in outdoor recreation. The measure requires the department to establish application process rules and report to the Legislative Assembly by September 15th, 2020. It requires a grant agreement between the department and grant recipient to establish deliverables or other goals to be met, and it appropriates $500,000 of general fund to the department for the matching grants. We have a fiscal impact on this because it does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and there's a no revenue impact.
Okay, any questions regarding the amendment? Representative Bonham.
Chair Lively, I move to adopt the dash two amendment dated April 1st, 2019.
Representative Bonham moves to adopt the dash two amendment dated April 1st, 2019. Any questions, concerns? Doesn't look like it. Please call the roll for final passage.
Representative Barreto?
Aye.
Representative Brazen?
Aye.
Representative Helm?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative McEwen?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Wallen?
Yes.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bonham?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fahey?
Aye.
Aye. So the amendment is adopted.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 3251 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Bonham moves House Bill 3251 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion of that motion? Representative McLean.
Well, one of the frustrations that I have in this process is that we don't always in our policy committees prioritize necessarily mm-hmm. what we send down to Ways and Means. And so I'm going to vote yes for this today because there's a lot of good ideas out there, and this is going to go down and sit with a big pile of bills to try and get funding. And so I think it's real important for us maybe to think about the process in the future on how we can get policy groups and committees like ourselves to do a better job of prioritizing. We can send a letter, but, you know, how can we as a group prioritize a little bit better so that we don't have folks down there just weeding through all these bills without much implication from the policy committee?
Thank you for that. In the past, some of our committees, one of the ones I've served on, we actually, after we did all of this, then we went back and looked at them and set a priority list and sent down to Ways and Means if they had to make choices, what choices. So we could talk about that because there's time to do it before it gets through Ways and Means. And I'm very open if we want to do that, we're going to get through these to do some ranking or prioritizing. I think that's a good point. Okay. Further discussion? Not, please call the roll in final passage.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Friedman?
Aye.
Representative Helm?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative McEwen?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Wallen?
Yes.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bonham?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fahey?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. The motion passes, and the measure is sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. I think that's all the work.
That is. So okay. This is so our list of the carry
forwards. Here's the list of the measures we're carrying forward to April 8th, House Bill 2098, House Bill 3386, House Bill 2053, House Bill 2900, House Bill 2909, House Bill 2454, and House Bill 2243. So all of those are carried forward to Monday. So Monday will be our wrap it up. That's our last chance. So come prepared. Let's see if we can do speed reading. No. Anything else to come before the committee today? Okay. Thank you. We're adjourned.